Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream my show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. This is NPR News, and I'm Angela Davis. If you are like me, you are finding yourself taking lots of deep breaths these days to clear your head. Maybe you're listening to music and taking long walks around the park as well. There's been a lot of talk about self-care as we all navigate the lifestyle changes brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic and the racial reckoning triggered by the killing of George Floyd last May. Lots of Minnesotans have turned to the outdoors and nature to help them get through some long days. And today I want to spend some time talking about all that Minnesota has to offer with its abundance of lakes and parks. And who better to tell us about our options than the head of the DNR? On the line right now, I have the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Sarah Stroman. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning, Angela.
Hi, thank you for joining us today. And, you know, I just want to start by just taking a moment to think about and talk about the benefits of spending time outdoors. We are living through a time, you know, where many Minnesotans are experiencing a lot of stress and anxiety. And what do you know to be true personally about how spending time outdoors and appreciating nature can help us relax?
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting how we've seen Minnesotans just sort of instinctually head outdoors during the time that we're in here to manage their stress and anxiety. And, you know, personally, I've reflected on my childhood when, you know, kids were getting kind of rambunctious in the house and my mom would tell us to go outside and run around the block, right? Mm-hmm. And clearly it's, you know, it would calm us down both because we got outside and because we got a little physical exercise. And I think, you know, I've been doing a lot of that lately myself, you know, making sure that every day after a long day in front of my computer, I get outside with my dogs and my husband and we take a walk through the neighborhood and enjoy the parks and trails here in our community or on the weekends, get out. So, I mean, I think it's something that people sort of instinctually, a force they had inside them. I think it's something once people experience it and feel that feeling of just feeling better and taking that deep breath outside and in the clean air they can experience for themselves. And there's actually, you know, medical science that backs up that fact that getting outside is good for us.
Yeah, you stole my line there. I was going to say it's instinctive, it feels like. And, you know, as we just heard, you know, the latest news as we are following what's happening in some of these court cases, the trial of Derek Chauvin, what's happened in Brooklyn Center this week. Many people are feeling a lot of pain about, you know, racial inequality, but also, you know, economic stress. And do you think that experiencing nature and you know, planning time to sort of, you know, protect natural spaces, could that be something that eventually draws people together?
Yeah, I think it can be. I mean, obviously, you know, it's not going to be the sole solution to all of the issues that we're facing. But I think it is, you know, there is a very strong connection between the outdoors and protecting nature and spending time in nature and public health and social justice issues. And so, you know, I think we've seen that very clearly over the past number of months and past year.
We're looking for healing spaces. Yeah. So let's talk about state parks. During the past year, many of us turned to outdoor activities during the pandemic, places we like to go, our favorite events, you know, closed, events canceled. And being outdoors really was seen as a safer way to be with others. And so I know state parks saw a big increase in visitors. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, our state parks sure did. And of course, local parks and county parks, I mean, all outdoor spaces did. But with our state parks in particular, we saw a 25% increase in visitorship last year. We had more than 12.3 million people visiting our state parks and recreation areas in 2020. And just to put that into a little bit of context, over the past 15 years prior to 2020, we had about a 25% increase. So think about that. That's the same increase we saw in a 15-year period we saw in a single year last year. So, you know, it's really incredible. And I think, you know, reflects on the forward future, the forward thinking vision that Minnesotans have had in the past to invest in those systems and make sure, you know, Minnesotans were able to use those, particularly in times here where we're really needing to rely on those spaces for safe and healthy activities.
And has the DNR been able to you know, ask or find out why you saw the big boost? Is it because people were choosing not to fly and they were looking for destinations to drive? Do you know for sure what the reason behind it?
Yeah, we haven't done any particular research, but I think, you know, it's pretty evident that particularly early in the pandemic, we had stay-at-home orders. We were encouraging people to recreate close to home to limit community spread of the COVID-19 situation. And so, you know, particularly in those state parks that are close to population centers, we saw, you know, more increase. I mean, we saw more than that 25% increase. That's statewide. So pretty dramatic increases in those, to the point where, you know, our parking lots were full and visitors couldn't find parking spaces in those parks. So I think that was a big piece of it, that people were exploring places, you know, closer to where they live. And I think it was a great opportunity for people to see what is a bit closer to home and try new places that maybe they hadn't been familiar with prior to that.
So now looking at to the future, to the present, to 2021, do you think it will be as busy as last year? Are you seeing an increase in reservations for this summer?
I think we're still seeing, you know, a large number of people out and about. I mean, obviously, it'll change a little bit our circumstances as stuff opens up and there are more opportunities for people. You know, kids are back in sports and facilities are opening up. But I think, you know, a lot of people, again, they felt that experience of feeling better in the outdoors. And there's that opportunity for family time together in the outdoors. And, you know, there are a lot of people who made investments in bicycles and canoes and kayaks and other watercraft and other outdoor equipment. And so, you know, I suspect they're also going to want to get out and continue to use those things and to enjoy the places that they've either discovered or rediscovered in this last year.
Mm. And I'm sure there were many people who probably visited a state park for the first time last year. And so, you know, are there ways to build on that interest to continue that momentum? Is that a goal?
Yeah, absolutely. And our state park vehicle permit sales were up last year, both the annual and the daily permits. And so, you know, that's really exciting to see. And, you know, we have 75 state park and recreation areas across Minnesota. So, you know, and they're all very different, all very unique. They're all established for their own, you know, special purposes. And so it's not like if you've visited one, you've visited them all. So I think I know, I work to try to get to parks that I haven't been to yet. And I've heard from a lot of people who just anecdotally, you know, thought, well, this pandemic is a time for me to explore places I haven't been. So, you know, some people joined the State Park Passport Program and, you know, went around to different parks collecting the stamps. Other people, you know, took an area close to home, maybe the metro area, and tried to get out to different places. So, yeah, I think there definitely is something to build on there for people who have maybe discovered one area and now maybe they have an interest in going a little further afield.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Sarah Stroman, talking about what's ahead for the spring and summer at state parks and on trails and on our lakes, and talking about some of the activities that Minnesotans love and, you know, things that we do to try to relax, and from fishing to camping and hiking. And we have a phone call. We have a couple calls right now. Let's go to Minneapolis and talk to Haven, who is on the phone. And Haven, what did you want to ask about?
Hi there. Yeah, I was just wondering, according to some local journalists, there have been DNR conservation officers that have been present outside of the Brooklyn Center Police Station between Sunday and today. And I would just love to hear the commissioner's take on how the actions that have happened there, and the actions of police and other state officers, how that fits into the DNR's mission statement and why those officers were present there.
All right, that's Haven in Minneapolis asking about the police presence and at the Brooklyn Center Police Department, where we've seen National Guard troops and members of the State Patrol joining forces to, deal with protesters who have shown up each night. And she says that DNR conservation officers, there have been reports that they have been there. Commissioner Stroman, is that true?
It is true. And this is a question that's has come up because I think people are surprised often to see either in footage the DNR conservation officer uniform or to hear in reports that they are there, because it is a little bit different role than we're used to seeing our conservation officers in. But the reality is that DNR conservation officers are part of Minnesota's law enforcement community. They are licensed peace officers. They carry full law enforcement authority. They are trained for these situations, both in First Amendment issues to make sure that we are protecting First Amendment rights in these situations, but also in public safeties to make sure that we are protecting those who are exercising their First Amendment rights as well as members of the public. And so they do from time to time get called to assist the state law enforcement community on situations like this. And they do fall under the State Patrol and the Department of Public Safety in these situations. So some of our officers were called to Brooklyn Center on Sunday, and they will remain in this area until a period of time following the verdict in the Chauvin trial. They were planned to be potentially called to assist there as well. I think it's also important to note that there are conservation officers throughout the state who are not involved in this deployment. They're out there continuing to ensure conservation and protection of Minnesota's natural resources. And I think it's also important to note, because I've been asked this before, we do not use dedicated funds. We do not use our license dollars, our game and fish dollars, our state park dollars when our conservation officers are deployed in these general public safety situations. We cannot use those fundings. And so in the past, the legislature has appropriated separate general fund dollars for us for that purpose. And we have asked that they do that again to cover these most recent deployments.
We're talking with DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman about what we can look forward to this summer and this spring at state parks and on trails and on our lakes, and taking your phone calls. The number is 651-227-6000. In Forest Lake, we have a call. This is Randy. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, Angela. Thank you for your show. I am just so delighted to be in Minnesota with the beautiful outdoor opportunities we have. I think at least a half hour every day in nature is as vital as food. Mm. And one thing I wanted to point out is how blessed we are in Minnesota with all the water. There's a wonderful Blue Mind by Scott Wallace. It deals with the research of being in, near, by water. And this is the first year that we have not wintered where we have water, and it's been hard. So having the opening of the water is just fantastic. I have neoprene, so I've already been in the water since mid-March and just got back from Iowa from a two-day trip down there in the water. So I can't recommend it enough how important it is under stress and all that's going on. Boy, if you can walk near water, go up to Duluth, walk along the big river. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, if you can get in the water, get some neoprene and start early.
All right. That's Randy in Forest Lake. Thank you, Randy. He's testifying there that it has helped him with his healing, being outdoors, particularly around water. And Commissioner, that brings to mind a question for me just about being inclusive. You know, we have a strong outdoor culture here in Minnesota, but not everybody, you know, grew up with a family cabin. Not everybody has a boat. Not everybody even, you know, is able to swim. So what can you tell us about how the DNR is helping people embrace the outdoors and trying to bring more people who are, didn't grow up in this culture, giving them an opportunity to experience these things as well?
Yeah, that's really a very important priority of ours, is to make sure, particularly because, as we just heard, you know, our outdoors, our parks and our waters are so healing for Minnesotans. And so we want all Minnesotans to have that opportunity to feel those benefits. We also know that, people who get out and experience the outdoors build an affinity for it, and you're more likely to care for it. And so, you know, we build a new generation of environmental and outdoor stewards by getting people outdoors as well. So we're doing a number of things, recognizing that, you know, quite frankly, the demographics of people who use our outdoor spaces and who participate in our programs don't match the diversity of the state of Minnesota. And so we're really working hard to change that, both externally, as I said, in our outdoor spaces. We want to make sure those spaces are welcoming and inclusive to everyone. And we're working to change our workforce so that our workforce is reflective of Minnesota's diversity and welcome and inclusive, so that people can see themselves in this field as a profession, as well as in a recreational sense. And so, you know, we're working on a number of things related to state park access and access at our wildlife management areas for people with disability. We are working to translate our fishing regulations, and fishing season is upcoming, into a number of languages. Those will be translated into Spanish, Somali, Hmong, and Karen, so that they are more accessible to people who may find the English versions of our regulations complicated and a barrier to getting out there and enjoying angling opportunities. We are working to make sure that the opportunities that we offer in our outdoor spaces are relevant to a wider variety of interests and cultures. So, you know, for example, some people enjoy the remote camping opportunities that we have. Other folks prefer, you know, they feel safer if they can do that in a family or group setting. And so making sure that we're providing, you know, that full range of opportunities for people are just some of the things that we're doing to make those spaces more welcoming for everybody.
You know, Commissioner, what comes to mind to me, too, are sort of the challenges with transportation. And a new report co-authored by the Center for American Progress says that in Minnesota, people of color are 5 times more likely than whites to live in a nature-deprived area. And so to be able to access some of the, you know, the great state parks that we know are in northern Minnesota, but also in southern Minnesota, you have to be able to get there. So I'm wondering, are there ways that the DNR could partner with some of, you know, maybe nonprofits or groups that work with youth to get them to these places?
Yeah, that's something that we've talked about looking into is partnerships for that. And I think, for example, the No Child Left Inside grants that the legislature established last year was a way to provide some funding, whether it was state parks or other areas, to get kids who might not otherwise have the opportunity to get outdoors. I think the other thing that we're trying to do is recognizing that, you know, our state parks are one area, but we also have you know, scientific and natural areas. We have state forests. We have wildlife management areas, and making sure that folks know that those spaces are available to them as well, and that, you know, those letting people know how to access those and what activities are enjoyable there. Some of our wildlife management areas are great for going out for a hike when it's not hunting season, right? So those are available. And then the other thing that we're doing is recognizing that a lot of people don't necessarily care if they are in a state park or they are in a county park or they're in their local park. And so we also work really closely with other recreation providers, particularly the metro and regional park providers, to make sure that we're pooling information so that people can get information about all of the opportunities that might be close to their house and where they live, so that they can access those and enjoy them.
We're talking with DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman about getting outdoors and finding ways to enjoy our state parks and other natural resources as we all seek some space and time to try to relax during this difficult time right now. Right now, we're talking about getting outdoors and finding ways to enjoy nature so we can try to have some stress relief. My guest today is the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Sarah Stroman, and she's taking your questions about state parks, lakes, fishing, hunting, hiking. Now let's go to New Prague and talk to David. David, thank you for waiting. What's your question?
Hi, thank you for having me. So My question comes for the turkey season that's opening today. I understand that we're allowed to purchase only one tag for harvest, and we're only allowed to choose one means of harvest. So in other words, like with the deer season, we're allowed to, during the archery season, I can buy a tag and I can hunt throughout the entire season. I'm allowed to overlap with a shotgun or a muzzle loader, but I'm not allowed to do that with archery and shotgun for turkey. I'm wondering why that is.
All right. David wants to know about turkey hunting season, Commissioner.
Yeah, well, it today actually is the opener of the spring turkey season. So I should say good luck to all of the turkey hunters who are out there this morning. I know I saw a couple of successes come across my social media feed this weekend. And, you know, I think I don't have, you know, maybe the answer that the caller's looking for, but I you know, we manage every species differently, right? So I understand the opportunities are different with deer. We've actually, with turkey, opened up additional opportunities with hunting. You know, we used to be more in a lottery situation, but with turkey, because we want to space hunters out and because of the way the population is and the opportunity, we do require that you pick one of the six periods there. So it's, you know, different season structures for different types of hunting opportunities.
All right, let's go to West St. Paul and listen to Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Angela. I love the program and really honor to live in a state with such amazing natural resources. Mm-hmm. I wanted to put in a quick plug for a local community group that is working on this access issue, especially for underserved communities. It's a Facebook group called Urban Bird Collective, and it's organized by people of color in order to allow people of color in the Twin Cities especially, but around the state, to have access to the resources and expertise related to bird watching in the state. They organize bird walks, and they have online courses where they can help with bird identification questions. And it's just a great local group. You've probably heard about the challenges of, you know, it's not just about access. It's also about safety, because people in communities of color are oftentimes, you know, walking around with binoculars, or in rural areas, don't have the same privilege, basically, that white birders do. And right. So this is just a great local group that I just wanted to put a plug in for.
And Jim, tell me the name of the Facebook group. Urban Bird Collective.
Urban Bird Collective.
All right. Thank you. And we know bird watching has become very popular in the past year. Thank you, Jim, there in West St. Paul. Let's take another phone call in Moorhead. Peter's on the phone. Hi, Peter. Peter, I can hear you. Nope, no Peter. Okay, well, maybe Peter will call back. Let's go to St. Louis Park, where Marcus is on the phone. Hi, Marcus.
Hello.
Hi, we can hear you. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, Commissioner. I have a question just about the minnow importation bill and what your thoughts are on supporting that. We've had a shortage of bait, you know, and with record fishing license sales, it's become a problem year over year. So I'd be curious on what your thoughts are on that bill and what we can do to increase the supply of bait for fishing in the state.
Oh, I wasn't aware that that's Marcus asking about bait for fishing, Commissioner.
Yeah, that's a great question, because, of course, and particularly as we look to the fishing opener here, the availability of bait is a issue that is very much on angler's mind. And it has been an issue with bait availability the last number of years. The issue for us with the idea of importing minnows from outside Minnesota for anglers here to use is the potential for bringing in disease that then gets introduced into our lakes and could be a problem for our native fish. And so we have had concerns about the requirements and the certification processes around imported minnows that would ensure that we are not bringing in, you know, invasive species or disease or pathogens that could actually cause harm to our waters and to our native fish populations. I think we are very interested in trying to explore whether we can grow a bait industry here in Minnesota. You know, we, given the abundance of lakes, given the popularity of fishing here, I think, you know, it would make sense that we have some kind of aquaculture here that made that bait availability less of an issue. So that's our preferred approach. And, you know, I think we'll see what the legislature does with that issue. But, you know, I'm very interested in seeing what we can do to grow a Minnesota industry around that.
All right, let's get everybody up to speed on the fishing opener. Here in Minnesota, we know it usually falls on the same weekend as Mother's Day, but not this year. Mother's Day is coming up on May 9th, and the fishing opener is the following Saturday, May 15th. What can you tell us about that, Commissioner?
Yeah, it is this year, and I know that's been a point of confusion for some people. But the issue is that in state statute, actually state statute sets the date of the fishing opener, and it sets that date as the Saturday 2 weeks prior to the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. Oh. And this year, it just so happens that Memorial Day weekend is kind of the latest that it can be on May 31st. And so that puts the fishing opener on Saturday, May 15th. And of course, so there's always, you know, a couple years in the cycle that it will not fall on Mother's Day. So, you know, I think this year you kind of get a twofer. You get the Take a Mom Fishing Weekend, May 8th and 9th. And even though the walleye and pike season won't be open, there's still panfish opportunities for moms. And I am hoping and assuming that my son will be taking me fishing during that weekend. And then we get to go out on May 15th and enjoy the walleye opener.
So the governor's fishing opener is on May 15th there, and it's Ottertail County that is hosting the governor this year.
It is this year. And, okay. And I'm really excited about that. Ottertail County actually boasts the most lakes of any Minnesota county. And so I think it's going to be a great place to spend the fishing opener this year.
And my producers tell me that for the mom fishing weekend, which is May 8th and May 9th, that Minnesota resident moms can fish without a license.
That is true. Yes, it's a great deal for Mom Sunday.
All right.
For that weekend.
All right. Mark our calendars. Let's get back to the phone lines in St. Louis Park. Rachel's on the phone. Hi, Rachel.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a question about the level of litter that I've seen on trails this spring and even over the winter. And I just want to encourage everybody to walk out what you walk in. Don't leave anything there. And keep an eye on your gloves and masks and things that when they fall, you pick them back up. And if you're going hiking, bring a bag with you and pick up something that somebody else has left to make it better for everybody.
All right. Thank you, Rachel, for pointing that out. And have you seen a litter problem this past year, Commissioner?
We have seen some increases in that problem, actually. And, you know, it's been something particularly in the winter we see during ice fishing season, litter being left on the lakes after people take their houses off. And we've seen it out in the parks. And I appreciate the caller's reference to masks. I know that's something that, you know, with folks who are using disposable masks sometimes that we see out and about. One thing that I'll share with folks is in response to that and to really help Minnesotans be good stewards of our outdoor spaces. We launched this last year a Be Good Natured campaign. It's a social media campaign using the hashtag Be Good Natured. And it is a series of kind of those outdoor tips, how to be, you know, good neighbors to one another in the outdoors. And so things like, you know, leave no trace, pack out what you pack in. You know, if you have an opportunity to bring a bag and do some cleanup, that's great. Also making sure that folks, you know, remember, particularly with more people using the outdoors, we need to make sure that we're giving other people space. We need to make sure that we're not trampling native vegetation, you know, as we're out there on the trails with heavier use, those kinds of things. So encourage folks to look for those Be Good Natured messages and pass them on.
All right. I want to read a question that's coming in on Twitter. And Soren has been very patient. He asked me this twice. I want to pass this on to you, Commissioner. Soren wants to know what is going on with the Enbridge Line 3 plant rescue and rusty patched bumblebee surveys along the route as work is stopped due to wet soils. Can you answer that question?
Well, I'm not aware of anything that is going on during this period. I mean, he's correct that the construction is stopped during, you know, a period when it will cause damage to the ground. But I'm not aware of any particular surveys going on during this period.
All right. Let's take another phone call as we talk to the DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman about what's happening at state parks and along trails and lakes in St. Paul. Margaret is on the phone. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning. I'm calling because I'm looking for where I can find documentation about activities that are allowed for people in wildlife management areas. It's my understanding that people can also enjoy those areas, but they can also lease land. And so I'm curious as to where there are regulations about how land that's being leased is being used.
All right. And these, again, you said in wildlife rehabilitation areas. Is that right, Margaret?
No, wildlife management areas, WMAs.
Wildlife management areas. Thank you, Margaret. Commissioner?
Well, what I would do for wildlife management areas and the information on you know, how to access them and what's allowed there, our website at the DNR, dnr.state.mn.us, has, if you just type into the search wildlife management areas, there's a great page that gives you a lot of information about the system of wildlife management areas. It you can look up each one of those areas and find out what is available there and how to access it and what activities you might enjoy there.
Hmm. All right, another phone call. Let's talk to Tom in Cook, Minnesota. Hey, Tom, what is your question for the DNR commissioner?
Hi. First, I just want to thank the commissioner for her broad ranging knowledge on such a level of topics. So I appreciate it.
It's a lot, right?
Yeah. So I live in a pretty rural area in northern Minnesota, and I've got a concern with the use of tannerite on public lands. I'm a beaver trapper. I get back into a lot of ponds in the fall that I was planning on putting some beaver traps on, and I find that the ponds have been blown, the dams have been blown in the fall, and now the beavers are gone. And not only that, but it drains the pond so that it's not available to wildlife coming next spring because it freezes out. Of course, this is just on public land. Private land, people can do what they want, but it does affect, I'm afraid it affects wildlife populations. It happens pretty broadly across this area. And also I find that people are blowing a lot of these dams to be able to get ATVs through drainages where they never should be going in the first place. And that exacerbates the impact of ATVs on the wildlands. So I'd like to see the DNR work with deer hunters to educate the deer hunting population on the use of tannerite on public lands and have some more scrutiny of that.
And thank you there, Tom and Cook. And Commissioner, what can you say to that?
Well, I appreciate the question because it's the first time I've heard that particular concern about use of public lands. So, you know, we'll have to pay attention to that one. You know, I think it's always an issue, right? When you have people that use lands differently for different purposes and to make sure that everyone who might be a deer hunter and using it in that way, or somebody who is trapping beaver and using it that way, somebody who is out hiking, that they're aware of other users and how they're using it. So again, we can be respectful and be good natured for all of those uses.
All right. Let's continue to take phone calls as we talk to the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources in Moorhead. Peter is he wrote in a comment, and I want to share this with you, Commissioner Stroman. He asked, can the DNR do something about people who reserve a camping spot but don't show up? We end up with a shortage of camping spots for people who want them. I've camped for 10 years and see spots that go unused. Once I was at Itasca State Park, he says, and they had 37 unused spots, but it showed online that it was fully booked. A lot of folks are planning, want to go camping. And what can be done, or how are you all managing these camping reservations, Commissioner?
Yeah, well, and I know, I mean, a couple of things. One is we've moved in the last few years to an entirely reservable system in our state parks. And that was primarily because some of the parks were actually being underutilized because people didn't want to pull off and take the risk that there would be a campsite available. People want to know that there's going to be a site if they're going to go. So one of the things we've done just even more recently is change the timeline for being able to reserve a campsite. So they used to be open a year in advance. We've changed that now to 120 days as an effort to prevent people from reserving, you know, a lot of sites far in advance and then not using them when the time gets closer.
All right. As we take more phone calls, let's go to Minneapolis and talk to Corey. Good morning, Corey.
Yes. Good afternoon. I love your show. Real quick, I wasn't going to bring up the race issue, but you guys brought it up already. But I am a black man. proud, whatever. So, in regards to using DNR officers for the Chauvin trials and backup law enforcement, you know, I'm all for that. And also, they, but as long as you don't take it from the actual Minnesota resources. But they seem to be more civil. I've had other interactions with police in Minneapolis and the DNR out in the country. They're just much more civil. And, you know, maybe it's because the DNR officers know that, you know, we're out to have a good time, you know. But they're great people in Minnesota. Love them.
All right. That's Corey in Minneapolis, Commissioner, talking about DNR conservation officers. And earlier we had a caller who was asking about DNR conservation officers being present at the Brooklyn Center Police Department, as we've seen law enforcement officers there interacting with protesters. So what can you tell us about the training that goes in with all DNR staff in terms of community relations and how we interact with visitors to parks and on trails?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that is maybe a little bit unique about our conservation officers is that, you know, they are stationed in remote areas all over the state, and they live and work in those communities, and they're very visible members of those communities. So, you know, they're kind of attuned to that concept of community policing and being a part of the community and really understanding, you know, when education is going to get the job done, or, you know, when it requires something like a ticket or a citation, something more than that. They do, you know, training, obviously for around the fish and game part of their job, around enforcing recreation. They do cultural competency training now is part of their training. And, you know, then they also, as I mentioned earlier, have been doing some special training around First Amendment rights, mm-hmm. so that we're balancing, right, that public safety need with making sure that we are protecting mm-hmm. people's opportunity to exercise peacefully their First Amendment rights. The other thing that our enforcement division has been really focused on the last few years is diversity in its recruitment. And so really mm-hmm. wanting to make sure that the force of our conservation officers that reflects the diversity of the state of Minnesota. So they've put extra effort into recruiting officers from diverse communities.
Commissioner Stroman, our time has come to a close, but I want to thank you for giving us your time and answering the many questions of our listeners. We've been talking to the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Sarah Stroman. Thank you again, Commissioner.
Thank you so much, Angela. It's been a great conversation.
Today's conversation was produced by Maya Beckstrom and Lindsay Gensel. Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. If you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.